Thanks to a generous donor, we've purchased a building for the new studios and offices of Issues Etc., Lutheran Public Radio, and The Word of the Lord Endures Forever.
The donor will match up to $200,000 for the purchase and renovation. The entire cost is approximately $350,000.
You can view an architect's rendering and make a special tax-deductible gift at issuesetc.org.
Or call 618-223-8385.
Thanks for your consideration.
It was hurtful to hear you talk about the reputations of two United States senators who built their reputations and career on the segregation of race in this country. And it was not only that, but you also worked with them to oppose busing.
Everything I've done in my career, I ran because of civil rights. I continue to think we have to make fundamental changes in civil rights. And those civil rights, by the way, include not just only African Americans, but the LGBT community.
But Vice President Biden, do you agree today that you were wrong to oppose busing in America then?
No,
do you agree?
I did not oppose busing in America. What I opposed is busing ordered by the Department of Education. That's what I oppose.
That's a heated exchange between Vice President Joe Biden and Senator Kamala Harris in a Democratic candidates debate last year. As we speak, they stand together as the hopeful future president and vice president of the United States. What are the pros and cons of a Biden-Harris ticket? The New York Times today referred to Senator Harris as a pragmatic moderate. What does that mean, and is it true? And can we expect a bump for the Biden campaign, as usually happens with the announcement of a vice presidential running mate? We're going to get an update on the November elections, beginning with the subject of Vice President Biden's pick of Kamala Harris as his running mate. Molly Hemingway joins us. She's a Fox News contributor, senior editor of The Federalist, and co-author of the book, Justice on Trial. Molly, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Great to be here with you.
Were you surprised by the pick of Kamala Harris by candidate Joe Biden?
I think it's only surprising in that it was not surprising. Kamala Harris was always supposed to be Joe Biden's vice presidential pick, and so I think people were anticipating that there would be someone else, someone who would make the race end up being more exciting. Instead, he went with the person people always expected him to go with from the time they ran together for the presidential nomination, and in that sense, a very unsurprising pick.
What are the pros and cons of a Biden-Harris ticket?
Well, Joe Biden said that he wanted to pick a woman. Identity politics is very important to Democratic voters who judge people based on like biological markers or identity issues. And so it was important for Joe to pick a woman. And it was also deemed by the people in his party that it needed to be a Black woman. And so she is a Black woman. And that seems to be the major pro for picking her. As far as Joe Biden goes, he was part of a popular presidential administration with Democratic voters in the, you know, previous Democratic presidential administration. And I think this is an attempt by picking Harris to reform that Obama coalition that worked so well for Democrats for a couple of cycles.
Do you think it'll work to kind of recast it as Obama 2?
I don't think it'll work. I actually think this was not a great pick for Joe Biden should he want to win the presidency. One of the things that President Obama did he was someone who was more liberal but fashioned himself as moderate, and then he picked someone who at the time was considered more moderate, Joe Biden. In the intervening years since Joe Biden was named vice president for Barack Obama's candidacy, Joe Biden has lurched far, far to the left. You know, he was someone who didn't think, for instance, that people had to be forced to pay for abortions against their will. Now he believes that they should be. And there are a whole host of issues in which the base of his party has dragged him, you know, very far to the left. And instead of picking a moderate to balance him out, he actually picked someone just as liberal, if not, you know, more liberal than he is. Someone who has the most liberal voting record in the United States Senate, right there with Elizabeth Warren, Bernie Sanders, Cory Booker, So at the far left wing of the party, a California left wing Democrat, I don't see how that gets back voters that Hillary Clinton lost in 2016 in Michigan and Wisconsin and Minnesota. So it was an appeal to the base. I think Joe Biden knows that he has an issue with people not being very excited to vote for him. That was actually an issue for Hillary Clinton as well. And I think he thought this would get the base to turn out for him, but he also needs more than the base. Or if he wants to be secure in victory, he needs more than the base.
So what do you make of the New York Times referring to Senator Harris as a, quote, pragmatic moderate?
Mostly what's interesting about the media claiming that someone with an objectively liberal voting record and track record is a pragmatic moderate is that it just tells us that the media are not to be trusted in covering this race. That is just simply not true. And she has made quite a point of having a history as someone on the left. She is not just supportive of abortion. She actually moves to imprison pro-lifers and journalists who have exposed Planned Parenthood's wrongdoing. She was actually a ringleader of the anti-Kavanaugh circus, where Democrats didn't just oppose Brett Kavanaugh's nomination to the Supreme Court, they actually tried to destroy his life, and she was front and center in that. She has far-left positions on guns. She thinks that many guns should be banned and that people shouldn't have their Second Amendment rights. She is a supporter of a major increase in the administrative state to address what she believes are climate change problems. She's for tax hikes. She's for Medicare for all. I mean, they're really on any issue. There's no way you could call her either pragmatic or moderate. So the fact that the New York Times said that, or that they devoted their entire front page today to this hagiographic promotion of her when, you know, the last time someone picked a VP nominee, it was relegated to the bottom right hand corner of the front page, barely mentioned with a very negative headline when Trump picked Pence. It just tells us that the media are fully on board with the Democratic presidential campaign, and they will do whatever it takes to get Joe Biden and Kamala Harris elected.
Many times a ticket will get a bump after the announcement of the vice presidential candidate. Do you expect this to occur with Senator Harris?
Yeah, and usually that's also because, generally speaking, vice presidents are picked at the same time that the Democratic Party or the Republican Party has a convention. And conventions are when you get all this free television coverage, you get to put your best foot forward. And the Democratic convention is next week. And so I do think that if past is prologue, you will see a bump as a result of this VP pick and the convention. On the other hand, this is such a weird year, and Joe Biden has had a lot of success by being hidden. And the one thing about conventions is you can't hide. And so it's going to really get the campaign season started, and I think that might go to the Trump and Republicans' benefit. But still, I think people should expect something of a bump.
Do you think that there are going to be presidential and vice presidential debates?
It's funny that we're even talking about it, or that it's even a question. And it's a question because Biden supporters in the media are working to prevent there from being debates. And so you've seen it in the New York Times and on CNN and USA Today, prominent people saying that Joe Biden should not have to debate Donald Trump. That is not something people usually do if they feel strong about their candidate. And so I think it reflects some concern about Biden's debate performance. Having said that, I think people should remember he did pretty well in the last couple of debates in the Democratic primary. They were shorter. He seemed to have gotten a good amount of rest, and he was energized. And so I think Republicans should not expect that Biden will perform poorly in the debates. You almost see them acting like he'll barely be able to show up and barely be able to put a sentence together. I think that is wrong, and I think that he might surprise people by outperforming those very low expectations. And likewise, there would be no reason for Kamala Harris and Mike Pence not to debate. And Mike Pence really surprised a lot of people with his effective debate performance against Tim Kaine last cycle. And partly that was because Tim Kaine did such a bad job debating. Kamala Harris also should be a strong debater. And so I think you'll expect to see him, if for no other reason than when people hear that the Biden campaign is trying not to debate, it actually depresses their numbers and it turns people off. So for that reason alone, I think we should expect to see presidential and vice presidential debates. Unfortunately, they should be happening right now because many states are bringing mail-in ballots and letting people vote very early. And so the debates really should be moved up, but the Presidential Debate Commission has forbidden that.
So how do you expect a Pence-Harris debate to go?
Well, Mike Pence, I think people, again, this is one of the things where people thought he wouldn't perform well against Tim Kaine, or they thought that Tim Kaine would just eat his lunch, and it did not turn out that way. Tim Kaine, in the last cycle, tried to be like Trump. He was really aggressive and hostile, and it just came off very poorly. I think people don't remember his role in the Hillary Clinton campaign that much, but if they do, they remember that debate performance didn't go well. Mike Pence, I thought, was the undervalued asset to the Trump campaign. When President Trump was running, there were many conservatives, particularly Christian conservatives, who couldn't quite stomach him. And Mike Pence is someone with a good reputation, you know, known for being evangelical Christian. And when he got on the stage and handled all of those questions about how could someone who cares about morality and character vote for Trump, and he explained how it worked for him, I think a lot of Christian conservative voters looked to him as the guide for how they could support someone who they do have personal problems with, or who they don't think speaks the way that they wish everybody would, or live their life how they wish that he would. He was a very important part of that debate. And I think that will continue to be the case should he debate Kamala Harris in this cycle. As for Kamala Harris, she comes off very well, particularly at the front end. Her critics will say things like, even Democratic strategists will say, she comes off really well for the first 15 minutes, or she makes a good first impression and she gets tired. She grows old to people very quickly. I think she had some good debate performances. She also had some really bad debate performances. She's got a lot of charisma. She doesn't have a ton of substance to back it up. And so it'll be interesting to see whether the charisma can carry her forward, or whether she'll get on the ropes because of her contradictory track record. She's got a lot of stuff to defend from her time in California as a prosecutor and AG. And so Mike Pence would have a lot to work with. And then again, so would Kamala Harris debating Mike Pence.
We're getting an update on the November elections. Molly Hemingway is our guest. She's a Fox News contributor and senior editor at The Federalist, co-author of the book Justice on Trial. When we come back, we'll turn to President Trump. Has he made the case for what he wants to accomplish in another term? Thanks to a generous donor, we've purchased a building for the new studios and offices of Issues Etc., Lutheran Public Radio, and The Word of the Lord Endures Forever.
The donor will match up to $200,000 for the purchase and renovation.
The entire cost is approximately $350,000.
You can view an architect's rendering and make a special tax-deductible gift at issuesetc.org.
Or call 618-223-8385.
Thanks for your consideration.
This week on The Word of the Lord Endures Forever, we'll continue our study of St. Matthew with The Temptations of Christ. Jesus begins his ministry. Jesus calls the disciples. Jesus ministers to great crowds, and Beatitudes, Part 1. Join me, Pastor Will Whedon, for The Word of the Lord Endures Forever, your daily 15-minute, verse-by-verse, Bible study on demand at thewordendures.org and on the Lutheran Public Radio app.
Independent and in the black for 12 years and running, you're listening to Issues Etc.
What is the Lutheran Witness? Simple. It's a monthly magazine on faith and life, theology and culture that helps readers interpret the contemporary world from a Lutheran Christian perspective. Filled with expert insights, good writing, and inspiring stories, it also provides essential church information for LCMS members. What is the Lutheran Witness? Simple. It's the flagship periodical of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, and it has been for more than a century. Visit cph.org/witness to subscribe today.
This is Dr. Russell Dawn, president of Concordia University Chicago, with a message for parents, grandparents, and godparents of college-bound children. Concordia Chicago is a distinctive, comprehensive university of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. We're devoted to our Lutheran confession and committed to strong academics. Please encourage your child, grandchild, or godchild to check out Concordia University Chicago at cuchicago.edu.
Welcome back. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're getting an update on the November elections. Molly Hemingway of Fox News is our guest. Molly, turning to President Trump briefly, has he adequately made the case for what he wants to accomplish in another term?
I'm not sure if he has. And I think, you know, that's one of the things about this campaign having been so weird in 2020. It essentially hasn't started. The media message would be that this is over, that Biden has won every state. And I think voters are smart enough to know that that's about as true as it was 4 years ago when they said that the race was over and that Hillary Clinton had won it by this point. The campaign really hasn't gotten going. Now, I don't think the Trump campaign has a particularly different message than they had in 2016. And they have some benefits of having accomplished some of what they promised they would in 2016. And the underlying case that there was a swamp that needed to be taken on and that was having major problems and hurting the country, I think the swamp made the case better than even Trump and Pence could make it. So people who support them understand why they support this campaign. I don't think it's a particularly different message than what they had in 2016.
What impact do you think the global pandemic is going to have on these November elections?
Well, it's a good question, and I'm not sure anybody really knows the answer. I think first and foremost, the disruption to the actual process of elections is of concern to a lot of people. Because President Trump has done that thing where he talks about rigging elections or it's going to be stolen, a lot of the media reflexively renounced that, and they haven't been paying attention to the fact that a massive move to mail-in balloting is ripe for problems. And that'll be problems at, you know, state and local level, and that affects the national elections. And that is all pandemic related, because the panic related to the global pandemic is leading people to make decisions without thinking through the repercussions of those decisions. As far as the underlying issues, I think there are health issues and there are economic issues. The economy was forced to close by the government, and so we had horrible second quarter. You know, it did not have growth. We had a contraction there in the second quarter. But by that same measure, as companies are allowed to reopen in the third quarter, you're going to see massive increase in growth. So economically, I think a lot of Democrats were hoping that they could keep the economy crushed, because they know that the economy has been Trump's best selling point. But I don't think they'll be able to do that in the third quarter. And then as far as handling the pandemic, the Democratic messaging is that this isn't a global pandemic so much as just a national pandemic just affecting the United States of America, and that Donald Trump is the reason for it. I'm not sure if that's going to work, because most Americans do realize this is a global pandemic. It came out of Wuhan, China. There were mismanagement issues in China. And also, I wonder if Americans feel that the pandemic is as bad as they keep being told it is by the media. Yes. 150,000+ people have died, and that'll be more by Election Day. And every single one of those deaths is awful and sad, and particularly learning that so many of those deaths occurred in long-term care facilities affecting older Americans and whatnot. But it is also similar to other pandemics that the country has dealt with. The 1957 flu is a very similar example of how many people died and how the country responded to it. And it's nothing compared to the 1918 Spanish flu, which killed the equivalent of like 2 million Americans. And so as they understand it's bad, I think they also understand that the reaction to it has been quite aggressive, and maybe people will think it's in fact too aggressive. And so a lot of people in the Democratic Party are saying, keep schools closed, keep businesses closed, make sure the sports don't run. And I'm not sure if that's as much of a winning message as we keep being told it is by pollsters and media pundits.
My sense is that the pandemic, although it is global, has localized a lot of politics, where people are blaming their governors or even their mayors for mismanagement rather than anyone at the national level. What's your thought?
I think they're concerned about both, but in each case, you know, everything depends on how your local government handled it. In Virginia, we have a Democratic governor who's actually been pretty bullish on opening schools and even being supportive of private schools. That's not the case in a lot of states throughout the country, and I do think that there will be repercussions from that. Because we are a large country, how each state and even locality handles this should be more important than a national response. But the media are so nationalized, they're unable to really talk about things at the state and local level when it comes to elections, I think. So I'm not sure how that will shape up.
Is it too early, given this strange election season, to tell how Senate and congressional races are shaping up?
Well, I think we do have some insight into how things are happening. There are some very key states for the Senate where Democrats are hoping to pick up some seats, whether that's Susan Collins in Maine or Cory Gardner in Colorado. It's also true that the senators themselves could have a significant role in how the election itself turns out. It seems that the Republican leadership in the Senate has an understanding or a belief that they should try to distance themselves from Trump, and that from President Trump, they want him to suffer maybe, and they think they will be able to ease on by. I'm not sure that's such a brilliant electoral strategy. If President Trump does not win the presidency, it is highly unlikely that Republicans will keep the Senate. I think there are some Republican elites in Washington, D.C. who think that's a fine price to pay so long as they can get rid of President Trump, who they don't tend to support. But I don't think they've thought about how Republican voters are overwhelmingly supportive of President Trump and would like their senators to also be that way. You saw this play out in the recent riots that are still ongoing throughout the country. This is kind of a gift from the electoral gods to the Republican Party. You have the left base of the Democratic Party, you know, committing violence, looting and assaulting people in cities, destroying cities. And that is something that should be very easy for Republican senators to run on. And instead, they have been curiously silent. A lot of them have been very quiet and not defending, you know, American ideals or statues, history, founding principles. They've just kind of been not playing the game. And I think that will not play well for them in the November election. So either they need to kind of wake up and realize that their fates are aligned with the Republican presidential nominee also, or they will all suffer.
Speaking of the left, are you surprised that three out of the four, there's one more primary to be held, members of the squad led by Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez have won their primaries?
I don't think that's particularly surprising if you've been paying attention to Democratic Party politics. The excitement really seems to be at that end of the party, and they control quite a few things. Now, I'm not saying that that would go on forever, in that at some point there are electoral consequences for the larger party if they all lurch that far to the left. But these are groups that are well-funded. They get a lot of media support. There's no criticism or skepticism of them from many people in the media, as you would see with an equivalent primary race seeing someone on the right side of the spectrum. And so they're dealing with that. But again, if regardless of what happens in November, I think that if that wing of the party continues to rise, you're going to see a further breaking apart of the Democratic Party, with a lot of people who used to feel comfortable voting in that party fleeing and rushing to the more moderate Republicans.
Finally, what are your thoughts on President Trump's executive order on COVID relief?
Well, I am an Article I imperialist who thinks that Congress should do their job as assigned in the Constitution, as granted in the Constitution, and that they should be legislating and handling many of our problems and our issues. And unfortunately, in recent decades, Congress has completely abdicated this responsibility and moved everything over to the executive branch, where they have the administrative state just kind of governing everything, setting the laws, becoming the juries, just handling everything. And all such executive orders like this, I mean, they might be legal, they might be considered constitutional, particularly after the recent Supreme Court decision that supported President Obama's more egregious version of this. But I think it would be better if Congress handled COVID relief and that the executive did not. And so I'm not a huge fan of it, but politically speaking, it is not a bad idea. A lot of people thought that Nancy Pelosi was having a great moment by dragging these negotiations out. And I think it was not so great to have her on the stage at a high profile level, along with Chuck Schumer. They are two of the least liked politicians in the country. And then to have President Trump come in and just take care of everything from underneath their feet is not a huge gain for them. And now they have to decide whether they fight him and take these things away from Americans or if they let him have this win.
Molly Hemingway is a Fox News contributor and senior editor of The Federalist, co-author of the book Justice on Trial. You can read her columns and purchase Justice on Trial at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Talk on Demand Archives. Molly, thanks.
Thank you.
Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we'll talk with Katie Faust about her recent experience at a Support the Police Department rally in Seattle. We'll discuss the politics of school reopenings with Joy Pullman, and we'll respond to your email and the Issues Etc. comment line. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Bahama Mama, Ocean Pacific, Paradise Island. Retreat from the heat with a shaved ice snow cone from Tropical Snow in Caseyville, Illinois. It's right across the street from Collinsville High School. Tropical Snow is open weekdays from 1 to 9 and weekends from noon to 9. Premium snow, epic flavors, lots of love. Tropical Snow across the street from Collinsville High School at 2134 South Morrison Avenue in Caseyville.
Jesus the Good Shepherd says, "My sheep listen to my voice. I know them, and they follow me. I give them eternal life." We invite you to join us as we listen to the voice of the Good Shepherd and follow him who gives us eternal life. Sunday worship services at 9 a.m., Sunday school and Bible class at 10:30, Good Shepherd Lutheran Church, Arnold, Missouri, on the web at goodshepherdarnold.org. That's goodshepherdarnold.org.